makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee, the blend that's friendship in a cup, present the Chase and Sanborn Hour. And your host, Rudy Valley.
This is Rudy Valley saying hi-ho and inviting you all to another Chase and Sanborn Hour. It is a pleasure, as always, to usher in the warm welcomes of Dorothy L'Amour, Donald Dixon, Robert Armbruster, and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra, and, of course, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Well, well, what brings on these high spirits, my little man?
Just happy, Mr. Valley, just happy. Oh, la-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum.
Well, if you'll just suppress your exuberance momentarily, I'd like to extend greetings to our two very fair visitors this evening, Loretta Young and Vera Vague.
Loretta Young and Vera Vague.
Discounting Charlie's background music, may I say that it is the combined wish of all of us that you continue to derive as much enjoyment out of Chase and Sanborn Coffee as you tell us you receive from our show.
Oh, Chase and Sanborn, da-dee-da.
Charlie, such exhilaration must have a cause behind it.
Oh,
what is it?
It has. Oh, I don't know. Just happy, that's all. Happy days are here again, 'cause Mortimer ain't near again.
So that's it. I might have known. Well, Tenor McCarthy, if you stop your very indefinite crooning, baritone Donald Dixon would like to get in a few notes. In keeping with our mutual happy frame of mind, Donald sings Hallelujah from Vincent Newman's Hit the Deck with a splash, Donald.
I'm recalling times when I was small in light and free jubilee days. Old folks playing, everybody swaying, loudly I chanted my praise. How I sang about the judgment morn, and of Gabriel to tell of his horn. In that sunny land of milk and honey, I had no complaints while I thought of saints. So I say to all who feel forlorn, sing hallelujah, hallelujah, and you shoot the blues away. When cares pursue ya, hallelujah, get you through the darkest day. Satan lies awaiting, and creating skies of gray. Sing hallelujah, hallelujah, and you shoot the blues away.
Italian composer Ottorino Respighi has painted many brilliant scenes on musical canvases, rich and revealing in tonal color. However, this music master used a softer brush, dipped in the more melancholy shades, for his composition Nebbi, or Mists. Donald Dixon sings it.
Lontano, le nebbie sono lente, salgono, molta gente piando. Ombra chiando, ricordi, girati alla Traversano le strade.
I can't figure it out.
You mean Dixon's song?
No. No, I...
What is it that's worrying you, Bergen? Quiet, Donald.
I just can't figure it out.
Well, stop worrying, Berg. Stop worrying. I tell you, everything is all right.
What's the matter, Edgar?
What did you say, Don?
I said, what's the matter?
Oh. Well, I don't know, Don. I haven't seen Mortimer for the last 4 days, and I don't know what could have happened to him.
Well, now, don't worry about Martin. That he's all right.
Yeah?
Everything happens for the best, says I.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe he's lost.
Oh.
Maybe he's hungry.
Oh, he can always eat roots and herbs, you know. Sagebrush. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I thought Mortimer was happy in Hollywood. I wonder where he is.
Well, maybe he's gone on a personal disappearance tour.
Yeah, Charlie, I think you know more about this than you're ready to admit. Now, do you know where Mortimer is?
What?
I say, do you know where Mortimer is?
Who?
Mortimer Snurd.
Him, yes. Well, stop worrying there again. You're such a fuss budget.
Yeah.
Probably he's gone back to Snurdville, huh?
I don't think he has.
I give you 8-5 he has.
Oh. You mean Mortimer went back to Snurdville?
Yes, he did, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was that his own idea?
Hmm?
I say, was that his own idea?
Yes, it was, yes.
Are you sure?
Well, I might have collaborated a little.
A little.
Maybe I'm being modest when I say a little.
Yes, I think you are, Charlie. Now, I want a full report of this.
Do you want the truth or my version?
Yeah. I want the truth.
Oh. Well, Mr. Bergen, you know, there comes a time of year when we get that holiday spirit. Around holidays, mostly. When you want to do people good.
Yes.
And my thoughts, they turn to Mortimer. So I done him good. But good.
Well, out with it. What did you do?
Well, Mr. Bergen, Thanksgiving is a day when we want to be with our kin folks, if we can.
Yes.
So I arranged it for Mortimer, see?
Oh, then you sent Mortimer back to Snurdville.
Well, that's the substance of it, yes. Eh?
I see. But I can't understand why Mortimer didn't even stop to say goodbye to me.
Well, he made up his mind rather suddenly. He left a note for you, though.
Oh, he did? What does he say?
I'll read it to you. It's right here. Let's see. Yes. Dear Mr. Bergen. Look how he spells dear. D-E-R-E-U.
That's not right.
No, anybody knows it's D-E-E-R. Dear Mr. Bergen, thank you for everything. I am going home. See, that proves it right there.
Yeah.
Please be good to Charlie. See, be good to Charlie.
Yes.
Because he has been good to me. You don't appreciate him. He is so conscientious.
What's the matter?
Can't read my own handwriting.
That's what I thought. Now, Charlie, I want you to tell me how you got the money to send Mortimer back home.
I sent him on a bus.
Well, a round trip?
Oh, no. One way.
To Snaredville.
Yes, yes. But you still haven't answered my question. How did you get the money?
How? What is this, Indian talk? Or...
Where did you get the money?
That's different. I got it around the house.
Well, where?
Well, there's my piggy bank, you know.
Oh, yes, your piggy bank.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I performed a major operation on it. I removed everything.
Yeah. You left nothing in your piggy bank?
Not a sou.
Yeah. I see. But I told you that money was to be saved, used only in case of emergency or sickness.
Well, that's the way I used it.
How?
Well, to get rid of the headache.
Oh, I see. How much did you have in your bank?
$1.20.
$1.20?
Yeah. And 3 slugs. Can't even trust myself.
Well, that wasn't enough there to Snurdle, was it?
No, it wasn't, no.
Where did you get the rest?
Oh, I just sort of scraped it up around the house. You know how one can scrape if one has to scrape?
Well, where did you get it?
That's around the house.
Charlie, you haven't sold anything from my house, have you?
Hmm?
I say you haven't sold anything from my house, have you?
Why, Mr. Bergen, how can you say such a thing? How can you jump at such conclusions?
Well, I just suspected.
Well, that's you. Always suspecting. Always suspecting. Shame. Shame. It's discouraging. It's disgusting. Makes me feel cheap.
Yeah. Well, have you taken anything from the house?
Well, yes, I have. Yeah. Couple of knickknacks. Yes, a knick here and a knick there.
Well, what knickknacks?
Well, you know, a funny-looking gun you had in your trophy room?
You mean my elephant gun?
Yeah, that silly thing.
Well, what about it?
It's gone.
Silly.
Yeah.
Charlie, that's a very valuable gun.
It is?
Yes.
I was afraid it would be.
It was owned by a Maharaja.
Owned by a Maharaja?
Yes.
Maharaja, yeah. Well, that don't mean a thing when you're hawking it.
I see. So I don't have an elephant gun now.
No. Oh, well, be sensible, Mr. Bergen. There hasn't been an elephant around our house in weeks.
That's beside the point.
Well, if one shows up, I'll redeem the gun. Gee, I don't know. Every time I try to do some kind deed, I get in trouble. It's discouraging.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call it a kind deed, Charlie. You know, you spoiled my entire holiday.
I spoiled it?
Yes, you did.
Oh, well, why?
Well, I planned on having Mortimer for Thanksgiving dinner.
You did?
Yes.
I don't think he would have tasted better than a turkey we had.
Oh.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Charlie, Thanksgiving Day should mean more to us than just eating turkey.
Yeah. There's sweet potatoes, too.
You know, more than that.
Pie?
No.
Wow.
Well, there's the pilgrims.
Oh, I never tasted any of them.
Oh, of course. Well,
oh, Rudy.
Yes, Dorothy?
What's your definition of fun?
Fun?
Yes, fun.
I thought you said fun.
Yes, that's what I said.
Well, fun is where you find it. Some people like reading, some prefer to trip the light fantastic, others...
Yes, but what's your definition?
My definition?
Yes.
Well, fun's fun, like hearing nice people sing. What's your definition?
Well, fun's fun, like... singing for nice people.
Then we're agreed. So we nice people listen while you nice people sing.
Okay, maestro. Are you having any fun? Hey,
fella with a million snappers and nervous indigestion. Rich fella eating milk and crackers, I'll ask you one question. Are you having any fun? What you getting out of living? What good is what you got if you're not having any fun? Are you getting any laughs? Are you getting any loving? If other people do so, can you have a little fun? After the honey's in the comb, little bees go out and play. Even the old gray mare down home has gotta have hay, hay, better have a little fun. You're not gonna live forever before you're old and gray. Still okay, have your little fun, son, have your little fun. After the honey's in the comb, little bees go out to play. Even the old gray mare down home has gotta have hay every day. Oh, have your fun. You can live long before you're old and gray. Still okay, have your little fun, son. Have yourself a little bit of fun.
It isn't the first time, it won't be the last. But now is one of the best times to hear our favorite headliner. He has something new to tell you and something well worthwhile.
Well, it's news for the ladies, mostly, because they've been asking for this. It's Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new drip grind. Now, how do you like that? Drip grind dated coffee. Just what you've been waiting for. It's tip-top coffee to begin with. A blend of the world's best, roasted within 24 hours' distance from your home and hustled to the stores right away. It's fine, fresh food, and you get it fresh. We guarantee that by the date on the front of every silver package, so you're sure of coffee that's fresher and richer. Coffee that's really friendship in a cup. Now, every few days, our fresh food delivery trucks come around to your grocer and leave just enough dated drip grind coffee to last until the next trip. And none of it stays in the stores over 10 days. It's a great blend, freshly roasted, and now in the drip grind. That's a prize package for anybody's money. But here's the best part of all. You get all this at a saving. You see, handling coffee rapidly and dating it makes fancy expensive containers needless. The new silver package is much cheaper, and that makes the price lower to you. Now that holds true for the regular grind too, if you prefer percolated coffee. But right now, we're talking about the drip grind. Fine coffee. Coffee that's fresh like the cream you put in it, at a price that tickles your purse. It'll pay you to try it out tomorrow. Just ask for Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new drip grind, and you're in for a real coffee treat.
A gentleman on the reception line should put his best foot forward and make the deepest of bows when the visitor he greets is as lovely and talented as Loretta Young. Thus, the best foot and the deep bow. Every time we greet Loretta, we have the pleasure of complimenting her on yet another screen triumph. This time, it's Walter Wanger's production, Eternally Yours. Miss Young appears for us with Barton Yarbrough in an original radio play by John L. Green entitled Man's Best Friend. We present Loretta Young.
The
The scene is the cheery breakfast nook in the home of Steve and Kathy Robbins. But just at the moment, a frigid silence hangs over the scrambled eggs, bacon, and coffee. It has chilled two of the three individuals sitting there. The third, Droopy, a dog of questionable but humorous parentage, looks on curiously.
No, no, Droopy, no. I realize that Kathy isn't very good company this morning, but let's not whine. She's not speaking to me, but let's be brave about it.
Droopy, will you please tell that night-prowling animal next to you to shut up?
You wouldn't say that now, would you, pal? After all, a man's best friend is his dog.
Now, look, Droopy, who feeds you every day? Who gives you bone? Well, there, you see, I thought you'd remember who takes care of you.
Well, underneath me, Droopy, deep down in me, you know there's a heart of gold, don't you? Well, a heart of dog biscuits, then.
Oh, Droopy, don't let him tease you that way. Tell him that you think a man who comes home late without telling his wife he won't be back for supper is a low, crawling insect.
Don't you say it, Droopy. After all, I'm practically moved into your doghouse already. We're going to be roommates.
Tell him that you prefer the fleas that have six legs.
Well, how do you like that? That just proves the old proverb. A woman spurned has no fury like a woman whose dinner is spoiled.
Would you please ask him to pass the salt, Droopy?
Imagine, Droopy. For a mere buck and a half worth of meat and vegetables, she sabotages my happiness for the entire next day, ruins my breakfast, and hides the morning paper, so I have no way of escaping her silent fury. Now, is that fair? Droopy, I absolutely agree with you. By the way, you don't happen to know where the morning paper is, do you? Well, I just thought I'd ask.
That's right, Droopy. He punishes you when you stay out all night. And I'd hate to repeat some of the things he says about you. Why, they're not exactly polite.
Well, I'm sure you understand that simply because I don't want you associating with any of the common dogs in the neighborhood. Believe me, I save you a lot of scratching.
Have a little piece of bacon, Droopy.
Tell you not to be fed at the table.
Pay no attention to him. Here. Now then, Droopy. Suppose that you were married to that soft-eyed little cocker spaniel next door. You know her name is Lola? Well, how would you feel if she left one morning and didn't come back until 3 a.m. the next morning? You'd be pretty worried, wouldn't you? And you'd be plenty sore, too. Yes, of course you would. And there are other attractive dogs around. And 3 a.m. is a quaint hour to be making purely business and social calls. Biscuits, Droopy?
Advise her that you resent her trying to influence you by pronouncing isn't it so it sounds exactly like something to eat, namely a biscuit. I think that made it entirely clear to her. Now, about the situation she mentioned, Droopy, I'm sure you would realize, as I do, that a certain amount of faith and trust is necessary to marriage. Now, you wouldn't be suspicious of Lola, would you? No, of course not. After all, if two dogs or two people can't trust each other, what... Well, I hesitate to go on.
Please remind him of the night that my train home was delayed, and he and you spent $3 and $12 in cab fares hunting for me. And remind him that among the persons he called on were several old boyfriends of mine. And you might also recall to his fading memory that he was in a very nasty humor when I did get home.
Well, point out to her that I was worried.
You tell him that I was worried last night, Droopy.
Droopy, I'm afraid we lost that, Ron. Oh, you don't know how peaceful a dog's life is. No one questions you. You can live a bohemian existence, free food, free shelter, surrounded by admiring females.
Ask the autocrat at the breakfast table if he wants more coffee.
Say yes, Droopy. You might add a please, just for courtesy's sake. Have a large piece of bacon, Droopy. That's the boy. Gulp it down.
There you are. You see, Droopy, it's wrong if I give you food at the table. But it's perfectly okay for him. The king can do no wrong. Well, I say down with the king.
Tell her thanks.
Tell him that he's entirely welcome. I'd do the same for any other bum who came to the door.
Well, Droopy, this must be all very confusing for you. I don't want you to labor under any misapprehensions. Now, look at her. See how those beautiful blue eyes flash like sapphires. Sapphires from the dime store. You know why? Because Kathy's mad at me and about me. In spite of my faults, and I admit there are many, there's something irresistible about me. I guess I'm just a charming guy.
Droopy, will you tell that amateur psychoanalyst that compared to his conceit, Casanova had an inferiority complex?
Yes, boy. Beneath that icy exterior, there's a sweet, lovely personality. She's really a wonderful person, Kathy is. Well, she has a temper, yes, but it's not her fault. When she was a kid, someone told her about the redhead legend, and she had to live up to it. She can be the most adorable woman in the world.
Look this way a moment, Droopy. Droopy, I hadn't wanted to tell you this, but there, sitting beside you, is the most irresponsible man who ever walked the face of the earth. And the terrible thing about him is that he is also a very handsome lad. And you've probably noticed the way he admires his reflection in the store windows.
Now, stick up for me, Droopy. Tell her that's a lie.
And this has made him think that he can get away with anything short of murder. And he can, too. And he does. He absolutely will not be trained. Of course, you've made your little mistakes. But you've learned better. That big hunk is too stupid to learn. His late homecomings are getting to be monotonous.
Droopy. Now, look at me, Droopy. That's the boy. Now, I want you to explain very carefully to Kathy that all day and practically all evening I was in a conference, an honest-to-Pete conference, with our vice president, Mr. Cochran, and our treasurer, Mr. Anderson, and the two big noises from the Chicago office.
Point out to Steve that it takes only 5 minutes to make a telephone call from his office to his home. Well, don't wig-wag your tail at him. Speak right up. Tell him.
Say to her that I thought about phoning her, and every time I thought about it, I couldn't. And every time I could phone, I didn't think about it.
Well, you tell him he used that excuse when he forgot our wedding anniversary.
Tell her I don't care. Tell her that's exactly what happened. She can believe it or not. Explain that every time I tell the truth, it sounds like a darn lie. And very soon I'm going to start lying so it'll sound like the truth.
Droopy, don't you think that a man with only one wife ought to be able to think of a few of the little things once in a while? Like calling up when he won't be home? And Droopy, please say to Steve that if I didn't love him, I wouldn't care when he got home.
Well, Droopy, old boy, go get it. Go get it.
Droopy, what are you doing?
Tell her it's none of her business yet. Go on, Droopy, get it, bring it here. Well, stop fooling around, bring it here. It's not a bone, bring it here.
Hey, what have you got there, Droopy?
Tell her that package is for her, Droop. Right, now give it to Kathy. Pick it up, give it to Kathy.
This is for me, Droopy? Well, what do you suppose it is?
Well, you might hint to her that since we haven't got an X-ray machine, she'll never know unless she opens it up.
Tell him I'll manage nicely, thank you.
Of course, she knows that I couldn't have brought that home for her because I never think of Kathy during business hours. No, I'm just the mug that makes life one great big empty vacuum.
Why, look, Droopy, here's the card. To my lovely and understanding wife from Steve. There seems to be a touch of sarcasm in the way he underscored the word understanding.
Tell her to open up the rest of it and stop being catty.
Oh, Steve.
Well, you know, it's just something.
Darling, it's the bracelet I wanted.
Yeah, well, I sort of thought you'd like it, so I...
Oh, darling. You're the most thoughtful person in the entire world.
Yeah, I know. I change my character completely every 5 minutes.
Oh, Steve, don't say that. You don't know how much I miss you when you don't come home or let me know. I'm afraid the most awful things happen to you. I nearly die until you get back, and last night I had plenty of time to die over and over again.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy. I should have called you, but I was busy. Really, I was. And yesterday, they made me assistant vice president.
Steve.
That means I do all the work that interferes with the vice president's golf.
Assistant vice president.
I get more money, too.
Oh, but darling, why didn't you tell me?
Oh, I don't know. I just...
Steve Robbins. You had that and the bracelet up your sleeve all the time. You knew I'd raise a howl this morning about you coming in late.
You mean a silence.
And you let me go on not speaking to you and calling you names and being mean, knowing darn well I'd be ashamed of myself when you gave me the bracelet and told me about the job. You deliberately egged me on to say nasty things. Oh, Steve, you heel.
Now, wait a minute, honey.
Now you know I'll never dare get mad at you again in the morning because I'll always be afraid you had a good reason for being late.
Kathy, now will you, please?
You put me on the spot this morning when I thought I was putting you on it. Steve, really, I could kick you.
Droopy.
Never mind about Droopy.
Droopy, for Pete's sake, as man's best friend, will you please tell that woman I'm in love with her?
Droopy, don't you dare do it. You make that big goof tell me so himself.
This is Rudy Valley, and the Chase and Sanborn Hour continues. We'll be right back. Once upon a time, as the story goes, the mythical god of love, wearied of his stay on Earth, possessed as he was of supernatural powers, he mounted his winged horse, Pegasus, and disappeared into the clouds. Frank Bridge set this fanciful story to music, and Donald Dixon gives it voice. Love went to write it.
Love went a-riding, love went a-riding over the earth on Pegasus. Clouds before him sprang to birth, and the frozen rims flowed. When all the youths and the maidens cried, "Stay here with us, stay here with us, King of Kings." But love said no. The horse I ride, the horse I ride has wings. Love went a-riding, love went a-riding over the earth on Pegasus.
The Greeks had a word for it. Our visitor this evening has 50. She epitomizes free speech at its freest, a chatterbox with a self-winding motor. It is always a real pleasure to welcome her. Hollywood's number one clamor girl, Vera Veigh.
Well, thank you, everybody. Hello there, Mr. Valley. My goodness, but you're looking fit.
That's very flattering, Miss Veigh. Yes. I try to keep fit, you know, up in the morning, cold shower, brisk walk before breakfast, a fast set or two of tennis. That's what keeps a man looking his best.
Oh, yes, it certainly shows, too. You know, Mr. Valley, you get handsomer every time I look at you.
Well, that's very nice of you, Miss Veigh, very nice.
Yes. I should look at you more often. No, I was just kidding. By the way, Mr. Valet, are you married?
No, I'm not, Miss Veigh.
Oh, well, neither am I. Isn't that a coincidence? I say, isn't that a coincidence?
Yes, it is.
Yes, but you know, when two people who aren't married are thrown together like this, it often leads to something. Of course, I won't press you.
What?
But I'd like to. Shame on me. But you know, at my age, I'm beginning to think about marriage. Although I don't think I look 25, do you?
No, not anymore.
Well, bless your heart, but, seriously, I don't know what this country's coming to. Men just don't seem to want to get married anymore.
How do you know?
Well, I've asked them. I delved into it. Where am I? What's Trump's?
Since the subject has come up, Miss Veigh, just what would you desire most in a man? Brains, wealth, or appearance?
Appearance, and the sooner the better.
No, you don't understand me, Miss Veigh. What kind of men do you like?
What kind? Are there kinds?
Yes. Yes, for instance, do you like overpowering men?
I certainly do if I can find one weak enough. The men's men. Oh, dear, I'm getting positively historical. No, but really, Mr. Valet, I don't believe in being too choosy as to type. I don't think it works out because you never get what you set your cap for anyway. You take my girlfriend, for instance. She always said she was going to marry a man 6 feet tall, even if he didn't have a cent.
She finally married a wealthy man who was only 4 feet 6 inches. I guess she took off 25% for cash.
Oh, dear, dear. Oh, my Donna Mobile.
By the way, are you going with anyone now, Miss Vaig?
Oh, yes, anyone. I
mean, what I mean is, I'm a modern woman, and I'm all for the modern woman, too. They're far superior to the old-fashioned type. Superior to men, too. They're brainier, more dependable in business.
Just a minute. What do you mean, they're more dependable in business?
Well, they're so intrinsically... intrinsic, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't. Do you?
Well, no, but, for instance, you never heard of a stenographer running away with her employer's money. Maybe that's because when she does, she usually takes the employer, too. No, the trouble with men is, the trouble with all of them is that they don't keep an open mind. I try to keep an open mind on all subjects.
I thought it was closed for repairs.
Oh, bless your heart.
I don't want to hurt your feelings, Miss Vaig, but the trouble with women in business today is the fact that men can put anything over on them.
Oh, that's not true. That's definitely not true. For instance, a salesman came to me a few weeks ago and sold me some land that was 2 feet underwater. I certainly told him a thing or two. I demanded my money back.
Did you get it?
Well, no. He sold me a motorboat. I don't care. I think women can do anything if they put their minds to it. Women nowadays are flying aeroplanes, sailing ships.
Can you sail a ship?
Well, certainly. It's very simple. All you do is push the... pull the... thing, and we're off.
Yes, you are.
Thank you. Women are coming to the fore, though, Mr. Valley. That's because women are naturally shrews. Shrewd. For instance, I knew a woman who was out of a job, and she did a very astute thing. She went up in an aeroplane and dropped 500,000 pamphlets, giving her qualifications for a job.
P.S. Did she get a job?
Yes, she did. The city put her to work cleaning up the mess she made.
Oh, no.
You can't down these women. Now that they've dropped the vote, they're equal to anything.
Then it's your firm belief that every woman should be allowed to exercise her franchise?
Allowed to? She should be forced to. Nothing looks worse than a woman around 40 with a flabby franchise.
I mean exercise the right to vote.
Oh, to vote. Oh, politics. Yes. Oh, yes, they're very important. Yes. I know I ran for a political office once. My goodness, it was upsetting. For heaven's sakes, they make me so mad, the very idea.
Wait a minute, Miss Vaig. What's all this outburst? What happened?
Well, every time I think of it, I see red. They had the nerve to accuse me of voting for myself 10 times.
What?
Yes, imagine accusing me of a thing like that. I was just furious.
That's very serious. That's a federal offense. I'd make them prove it.
Well, they did. That's what made me so mad.
The opening of a new musical show on Broadway is in itself an event. But when the musical score is by Jerome Kern and the lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein III, then it is an event par excellence, super special and creme de la creme deluxe. Broadway is currently applauding such an event. The new show, Very Warm for May. And it is my privilege to sing one of the Jerome Kern tunes, All the Things You Are. Never can be at ease when I meet her. Never say what I please when I meet her. Only become unbearably dumb and coy. Never can press my suit when I'm with her. Timorous, shy, and mute when I'm with her. I'm an inarticulate, bashful boy. Ah, if my heart could only find a voice. Ah,
if my heart could only find a voice. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are. Someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are mine. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. That trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are. Oh, someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are mine.
The best news in a long time goes in the air today. It's the answer to thousands of requests from people who knew what they wanted.
Yes, sir. You asked for it, and here it is. Drip, grind, dated Chase and Sanborn coffee. That's right. The same famous blend you've been getting right along now comes in the new drip grind to tickle your palate with a brand new thrill. Now, it isn't a man's place to tell a woman how to make coffee. But if you do use the drip method, why, of course, you want the finest blend of coffee you can get. You want a blend of really fine coffee, and you want it freshly roasted, because fresh coffee is the kind that gives you that real rich coffee flavor. So remember this. Our roasting ovens all over the country are turning out drip grind, freshly roasted. Your grocer gets his from one of our nearest ovens by fresh food rapid delivery. And he only gets enough to last a few days, and then he gets more. Freshly roasted. So you're sure of freshness, because every package is dated, and none remains in your grocer's store over 10 days. That's why you get more flavor and richer flavor in dated coffee. Regular grind or the new drip grind. And here's something else. The price stays right down where everybody can reach it. Because coffee that's sold freshly roasted doesn't need an expensive container. So we use this economical silver package instead and give you the saving. Now you get that saving on the drip grind also. Don't forget. So buy the folks a pound of freshly roasted Chase and Sanborn dated coffee tomorrow. Get it in the new drip grind. They'll love it.
Woof, woof, woof.
Dolly, what are you doing?
I'm trying to attract Miss Young's attention. I've been sitting over there with a grin from ear to monocle, and she doesn't even look at me. Ruff. Hello, Charlie. I'm sorry. Work at work. I knew it'd get her.
Apparently, you listened to that little doggy drama we did, huh?
Yeah. What was the name of it? Puppy Love?
No. Although we might have called it a mild case of distemper.
Doggone, Loretta, you killed me.
Say, you know, I was just thinking that if you made that play into a picture, I got a swell finish for it.
Oh, you mean with the dog sitting up and saying, "That's all, folks"?
No, that ain't it, no. Oh. It's a close-up picture of the dog's tail wagging.
Oh, that would be cute. Yeah. The dog wagging his tail.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. See? Happy ending. I guess it wasn't as good as I thought it was.
You know, Loretta, only a few nights ago, Charlie and I saw your latest picture, Eternally Yours, didn't we, Charlie?
Yeah, that was the one where she's married to a magician, isn't it?
Yeah.
I
enjoyed it immensely, Loretta. You see, I'm interested in magic.
Oh, are you, Edgar?
Yes, Thurkin is a presto agitator. A what? Presto digitalis.
No.
Now just let me flounder, I'll get it. Presto indigestion.
No.
Presto middle valve down. All right.
Charlie, what you mean is prestidigitator, huh?
Yeah, that's it. It was pressed something, yeah. That's what Bergen is, still. He really is, still. He really is. Aren't you?
Yes, well, I once did a magic act in vaudeville.
Oh, what kind of magic did you do, Edgar? Was it sleight of hand or illusions?
Well, it was sort of a disillusion, financially. The best thing Bergen did was a rope trick.
Oh, yes, I've seen that one. Huh? You mean cutting a rope into pieces and then restoring it?
No, he does a better one than that, don't you?
Well, I guess it is.
Yeah, he lets a rope out of a hotel window with a suitcase on the end of it.
Now, wait a minute. No.
Yes, it did.
No.
He did once. Yes, it did. What an illusion that was. Fooled everybody. But the hotel detective.
That isn't true.
Oh, you did fool him.
Oh.
Well, I didn't know. You never told me.
I'll have you know that the Magician Society thought enough of my legerdemain to give me a testimonial dinner.
Why, that's wonderful, Edgar. Just think of it, Charlie, a testimonial dinner.
Yes, sir, they did. Mm. Every one of them testified he was a disgrace to the profession.
Oh, I don't believe that, Charlie. Well, I'll wager that Edgar was a wonderful magician.
Well, let's say a good magician.
Let's say rotten and then we'll have it.
I suppose as a magician, the first thing people ask you is, how do you do your tricks? Does that become awfully bothersome?
Well, no, I didn't have any trouble that way.
No, he didn't, no. The way Bergen worked a trick, he left nothing to the imagination. He removed all mystery. Nothing worked right. Say, this is Bergen. Do you remember Irene?
Oh, let's forget about her.
Tell me about Irene, Charlie.
Well, you see,
I'd rather you wouldn't, Charlie.
No, I gotta tell. I just got it.
Well, go ahead.
It's too good. It's one of those things, you know, just won't keep anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you see, Bergen once did an act with a girl assistant. Her name was Irene, see? Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to fire a gun and make the girl disappear from the cabinet, see?
Yes.
So,
what happened?
Well, I'm coming to it.
All right.
So, one day Bergen stood in the wrong place, see?
Mm-hmm.
And the gun went off and he disappeared.
Oh, he did. Well, for heaven's sake.
He was lost for 3 days. Nobody missed him.
Oh, now, Charlie. Was the vanishing trick your most famous stunt on the stage, Edgar?
No, I did one that I called The Floating Lady, which defied the laws of gravity.
And good taste, I might say.
The Floating Lady? My Edgar, that sounds intriguing. Tell me about it, will you?
Well, in this effect, a girl remained suspended in midair with no visible means of support.
No visible means of support?
Well, she had a rich uncle in Kentucky.
Will you please stop? I was very proud of that effect, Loretta.
Well, I don't wonder. How did you do it?
How did I do it?
Uh-huh.
Well, to keep a girl suspended in midair required a command of supernatural powers and thorough knowledge of hypnosis.
And 4 strong wires. Five after Irene had dinner.
All right. That will do now, young man.
Yes.
Oh, Charlie, it isn't fair of you to belittle Edgar's talents like that. Why, if you're sure that he can do magic and well.
Thanks, Loretta. If somebody had a thimble here, I'd show you a simple little trick that's quite mystifying, too.
A thimble? Mm-hmm. Well, what would you do with it?
Well, first I punch a hole in the bottom of the thimble.
Yes.
And then I take a long strand of hair from my head.
Stop!
All right.
That's a good trick right there.
All right.
Oh, Charlie, you certainly have a lot to say. After all, where were you when Edgar was doing all these tricks?
I was there. I was there, saving the act as usual.
Uh-huh. And just what did you do?
I used to throw a rope up in the air, see? Mm-hmm. Now follow this, because it's terrific, see? I threw a rope right up in the middle of the air, see?
Yes.
Climb up to the top of it, and then disappear.
No.
Yeah, and for an encore, I'd pull the rope up after me.
No.
Thought nothing of it either. That's what I did. You don't believe me, huh?
Well, no, frankly, Charlie, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh.
You know, I do a little mind reading every now and then myself.
Oh, mind reading, eh?
Uh-huh.
You mean you can really tell when I'm lying?
You bet I can.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you gotta prove this mind reading stuff to me. I don't believe in the stupid natural. I'm skeptical.
All right, Charlie, I'll prove it to you. Now, you just think of a number between 1 and 20, and I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, 1 and 20. I see. There's so many of them, I don't know.
Take your time.
Okay, I got one.
Very well, you're thinking of 6.
No.
That's funny. 10?
No. Guess again.
14?
No. Try 12.
All right, 12.
No. It was 6 all the time.
Well, I said 6 the first time.
Oh, did you? Well, I knew I heard it someplace. What other tricks don't you do, Loretta?
Well, I know one I'm going to do right now.
What's that?
I'm going to make myself disappear. So long, Charlie.
Robert Armbrust and the orchestra play Sparks, composed by Mussorgsky, and originally intended for the piano, but the maestro has arranged it for the entire orchestra. Sparks. Famous Scotch classic, Annie Laurie, loved by all for its beauty and simplicity.
Where early falls the dew. give me her promise true, which never God will be. And for
saying goes, but as sayings go, a fellow named Thackeray, William Makepeace Thackeray, to be exact, had very pretty words for it. The play is done, said he. The play is done, the curtain drops, slow falling to the prompter's bell. In other words, so long till next Sunday evening. From the Chase and Sanborn enthusiasts here in Hollywood, to the Chase and Sanborn enthusiasts in your home. And meanwhile, we hope you'll be enjoying just about the best coffee that money can buy or man can brew. Chase and Sanborn. We'll all be back next week. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Donald Dixon, Dorothy L'Amour, and Robert Armbruster and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra. We've invited that very funny fellow, Arthur Treacher, and that very brilliant and attractive young Irish actress, Maureen O'Hara, to be our guests and join in the fun. So until we all meet again next Sunday, this is Rudy Valley anticipating another high hope. Next week, another big Chase and Sanborn Hour. Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Rudy Valley, Donald Dixon, Dorothy L'Amour, Maureen O'Hara, Arthur Treacher, and Robert Armbruster in the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra. Heard on this program, The Big Show by Jerome Kern. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.